Hi, I'm Josh, and Papa's a creep, demon from the deep. Papa's a creep, watching when I sleep. So I made up my mind, I'm killing my baby.
Killing my baby.
Awesome. I feel like there's a level of expectation that I put on myself after you have an entire, like, song parody intro that I'm never able to match.
It's like four lines. It's fine.
I know, but that means you thought about it before, and I'm just stalling trying to remember what movie you're referencing.
Oh, Shelby Hooks.
Thank you. I thought that's what it was. Okay, good. You know, we bury the dead. We sometimes think about the dead. Some people pray to the dead. Did we ever listen to the dead to see what they want us to do?
If they could speak, they would say, get me out of this box.
If they could speak, they would say, what a long, strange trip it's been.
Well, see, I think if they could speak, they would say, why did you put me in this coffin? I'm not dead yet.
That's some ungrateful dead right there.
No, the hardest I've laughed at anything in a very long time was this mashup clip where these people were pushing a coffin off the edge of a boat, like they're in some, you know, oceany area, you know, and they're saying goodbye to the person, and they're kind of, but they push this casket over the side of the boat, and they're saying goodbye, you know, so and so, or else, and then it just smash cuts to a static shot of a shark. We're like, "Hi, I'm Becky. This is an unboxing." I about shit myself. I laughed so fucking hard because it's so inappropriate, but it's so fucking
great. It's really
great.
Good.
Oh God Almighty, this is Charlie Dunn Austin. There's no way that I can fumble my way through some kind of a joke for Monkey's Magic Merry-Go-Round, except for thinking about the three of us trying to get the title at 12:45 at night and just repeating just deconstruction of the English language in just such a delightfully stupid way. And it's like all of us speak English pretty decently. And, you know, Josh speaks a couple of languages, and it's like none of us could get this damn title to the degree at which I wonder if maybe the producers of the movie should have maybe like just shortened that bitch up a little bit.
And yet somehow all three of us can remember Tu Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything.
Julie, yeah, it's just like, yeah, it's so long, and thanks for all the fish and every silly thing that Terry Pratchett came up with. I mean, it's sort of like there's many subtitles of Pratchett books. I mean, I'm looking at a couple of my bookshelf at the moment, and it's just like two sentences of just silly, all the silly. And it's sort of like, yeah, if I try to think about it long enough, I can think of whole sequences of lines. But just a title I'm literally looking at in print in front of me, like, yeah, I can't get the title down. No, not going to happen.
And we're going to walk up a hill but come down a mountain. On our show hot dog. Based on a novel pushed by Sapphire. So first up, we had a short this week called You Were Never Yours, or Tu Nunca Fueras Tuyo.
Hey.
And this is about a guy who's watching TV and lives with blank walls like an assassin. And
it's young Leon the Professional. Right.
I just always think of that Shang Wang thing now whenever I see the typical dude apartment. Like, there's nothing wrong with it, but it's just the only furniture is a TV and a couch that's pointed at it. And then he's got the Hymne's day bed in his bedroom. But, you know, he's watching TV. Creepy things are happening. The lights kind of go off and on. For a while, it seems like this is just going to be very low rent, because it's very clearly just like one guy putting a camera somewhere and then filming himself. Then there's a pretty baller little effects sequence that is genuinely creepy, and that is neat. And then it kind of ends on a shrug. But just for the amount of creepiness that he gets out of that one section, and based on how the rest of it is filmed, it's just like, how the fuck did he do that? Damn.
Yeah, that was so why I was impressed with that. I picked it for that reason, because I was watching this going, it's short enough, I'll check it out, because there's a lot of things that have kind of the look of the early part of this short, which is, yeah, usually just it's like a single person or sometimes maybe two, and they'll be doing a little short in their apartment or their house or their cabin or whatever. It's their Airbnb. I watched a couple of those tonight. But and you can tell it's just like you could do this whole thing in a single night of shooting. And then, you know, you could even with like two VCRs. Or edit it because it's that little needed, right? And it's like, those are fine. I'm glad they're having fun and maybe they're learning stuff, but like, there's usually not enough there. And I was just about to turn this one off. And then you hit the scene where all the effects work goes. And it reminded me of, I was listening to the interview that I can't remember, James Wan did with the Obsession guy. I can't remember, Curry Baker. And, or was it the Backrooms guy? Backrooms guy, I'm sorry.
The Backstreet Boy.
Yes. But they were, you know, and he's like, so how does this go? He goes, well, COVID happened and I just sat down and started learning all the digital editing programs. And it's like, that is so informative for how we're getting these really insane YouTube videos every now and again, or YouTube videos getting made into features, because it's like kids that have way too much time, which I wasted playing video games at their age, are sometimes deciding because they're bored to become filmmakers. And then we'll have a thing where, because it's very easy to study, you know, a computer program and learn from programmers, from YouTube videos, how to do it. I think it's a lot harder to pick up the rest of film language without either a lot of mileage or some other classes, right? So like, if you just had to kind of learn by yourself, I bet you could get decent at certain video effects and you'll still be kind of like, you know, early days Canon films level with some of the other stuff. And that was what I thought was so fascinating, is if we're going to see people's effects outpace their, even outpace the ambition of their short, which is also interesting. So yeah, I thought this was fascinating. I wanted to see what you guys thought. What do you think, Charlie?
Yeah, I mean, the part, so I think the... there's a middle part that to Josh's point that I thought was real solid. I think when we get to the third part, we start getting the different versions, the black stuff coming out of the eyes. And then that part of it was like, ah, you missed, but you just like, but up to that point, there was definitely a couple of moments where I was like, oh yeah.
Or just so falling upward from the bed. It's like, yeah, how did that
one just was like, I gasped like, whoa.
Well, and then also too, like he captures this thing. I want to give this dude a lot of credit. He seemed like a young guy because he's like, you know, pretty much like did the pretty much as a one-stop shop thing. Outside of that last bit, which I said, this kind of falls all over things we've kind of seen a bunch of times, that middle section really hits. But at the very beginning of that section, he captures that thing where he's looking out the window, and then like somebody kind of peeks out from behind the tree. And it's like, yes, this is a very universal thing where if you capture it right, it just goes gah, and you feel it in the back of your knee, because it's just sort of like, yeah, I'm looking at a static thing and then something occurs. I'm like, no, that's not supposed to be that. And it's like, and so he captures that in a very simplistic way. And I really think that if you take from that point up through that little bit, you know, where there's this, what you're describing, if that was kind of like everything, then I think it would land a lot stronger. But some of the open out shots, like the black stuff from the eyes and the rolled back eyes and that stuff, it was kind of like, it's like, okay, well, I've seen it 100 times before. And also it's like, it's not lit in the same interesting kind of mysterious kind of way. And so it becomes more like the middle school dance once the lights turn on kind of thing in the last minute of that. And so I just like, just get back to that middle part, because that middle part was really super solid. So yeah, the A for effort for sure. And keep working, keep building, you know, and sincerely, like keep going along, dude, because that's cool. So
hell yeah.
I'm not mad at it. I just sort of, yeah, I just would want that middle part to be the whole thing.
I see. I do think there is something to having something look kind of rough, like homemade and rough around the edges and low budget, and then pulling an effect that makes you go, you buy it more because it seems like they don't have the resources to pull it off. I think that's something the first VHS did really, really well over and over.
Oh, yeah.
We're just like, no, they're filming this on like a shitty pair of glasses. Like, how would they get the thing's face to split in half like that? But really, the artifacts are hiding the edges, right? And that makes perfect sense. I didn't realize that on the original Backroom short, when he clips into the other dimension, that's all rendered in Unity.
Oh yeah, I think he talked about that in that James Wan interview. It's actually kind of astonishing how that stuff comes together and how it's just a series of coincidences, essentially, which he freely admits, which is awesome. He also said he'd probably do some more shorts. He's like, I still got a channel. I'll still do stuff. She's like, yeah, stuff will pop up on there. But my guess is he's going to get enough offers to be pretty busy for a while. So,
yeah, when you do the like $180 million off of a $15 million budget.
Or whatever, yeah.
Oh, was it that high, really?
Yeah, it's a ridiculous. They That and
I don't know how the actual budget made
a couple hundred million. I think we did a little bit of looking on. Carr's got like the IMDb Pro thing, and based on that and some interviews, we're guessing it's like 20 to 30 total for a budget.
You're talking about all in. So like the production budget would have been under 10 then, wouldn't it?
Something like that. Yeah. Okay. 10 to 15. Yeah. And so like all in 30 and they're at like 280. So
yeah. Obsession, he said it was beating like Mandalorian. A million, and then Focus bought it for 14.
Oh yeah. I do remember that, because I do remember that being a thing. Cause I remember that being a big number at the time. Yeah, I remember that a little bit. Well, good for them. I mean, good for them.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome. I believe they greenlit a sequel to Backrooms, but I don't think the same dude's making it. But I believe they both have plenty of offers that they can kind of, you know, they're at their possible blank check phase.
Well, and I just, I wonder about that kind of stuff, because there's like the two wonderfully ridiculous Australian guys who did Talk to Me. And then their follow-up was just sort of like, it was just sort of rudderless and had some good moments, but it was just sort of like, it's like, you got to get back to the core of, you know, this thing you're doing. And so I always worry a little bit about the younger ones that seem to have just a lot of talent, a lot of energy, and a lot of creative ideas, where it's sort of like, that is really great. But,
like we always say, it's amazing any movie gets made. So yeah, like that's why you see a lot of people that have like one or two movies and they just are gone. It's a brutal industry for plenty of unfair reasons. So yeah, it's like you kind of need like your breakout hit, a movie someone else wrote that shows you don't have to do your own thing, I think, and then something with a budget. If you can do that fourth one, they'll kind of let you do whatever. And so we'll see. They got a little while yet, but
yeah, just you always hope for the best for sure. And it's sort of like, but yeah, any part of any directing, writing, performing, whatever, like, you know, it's like it is a job. Like it is a career. It's not just sort of like everybody's just sort of writing $100 million checks. It's just not really like, I just saw really recently I don't remember what we were watching, but there's an actor who popped up in this thing we were watching. I was like, I know that face. I gotta think about it for a minute. And I remembered it was like one of the guys who works on the campaign in the seventh season of West Wing. He plays this character named Brandt or whatever else. And it's like, I don't remember seeing that dude in anything for quite a while. And it's like, I don't know. Maybe he was an accountant for 10 years. The fuck if I know. But it's sort of one of those things. It's just one of those, you get your name in the credits and a thing. And it's sort of like, yes, but then you must continue to do them.
That's and then the next morning happens. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Instead of like, you know, so, but yeah. So I guess my main thing with this young fellow is like, you know, like definitely hats off for strong effort, and had some moments in that he really can capture something really solid. And I think the main thing is just, you know, not because you're the most talented person in the world, but I think if you're going to, as you're continuing to work on stuff, it's really important to kind of forget that other things exist. Like just sort of don't, you know, just kind of tune it out, because that last minute or so felt very much like, oh, I saw somebody do this. And it's like, yeah, but you, in the middle part, you showed that you can really find the creative, you know, thing in there, and like just focus on that. So it's just like, so, but hats off to you for getting it done for sure.
And speaking of smaller movies that do interesting things, let's talk about We Bury the Dead, or Enterramos a los Muertos.
Yeah.
I think that it's fascinating that zombie movie is almost its own genre at this point, with its own expectations and everything. And yet it gets subsumed by another genre, which is Australian somber thing.
Yeah.
At this point. And you know, it's the Wake and Fright and Until the End of the World kind of thing. And this is a movie that manages to be completely fresh while having some zombie stuff going on, right?
Yeah, no, this was, I love this. I thought this was really, 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 really good. And it's like, it does that Australian thing where, was it Berditer, where it's sort of like you have the horror component, but you also have these sort of uncomfortable things. They have these uncomfortable subjects, and the Australians seem to be really good at being able to like sort of slap these things in together, where over the years, I mean, I can think of other Australian movies, like Animal Kingdom is one, or the fucking amazing perfect movie, The Square, where like they put you in these uncomfortable situations where you have to kind of reckon with stuff. And like with this one, it's sort of like, you get this thing of being like, oh, they're testing this weapon, and it just sort of just blew up New Zealand, essentially. Like, it's just like killing everybody in New Zealand. And it's sort of like...
Tasmania, not New Zealand.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
And it's sort of like... And it's sort of like, and they just sort of like, they don't spend a whole lot of time explaining it. It's just sort of like, you just have to like, this is the reality now. That's sort of like, and then here we go. And so you're kind of grappling with that. And then you're getting like, okay, well, you've got this sort of recovery effort, and you've got this thing of like trying to identify the dead people. And you've got Daisy Ridley's character, who is ostensibly trying to track down where her husband is, and maybe there's a chance on the South Coast area where maybe the weapon didn't make it that far. And anyway, you've got this kind of the setup of the thing. And so you've sort of got this very, I don't want to say standard, but very much like a tab A, slot B kind of setup. But then, being Australian, they just kind of go like, and then here's all this fucking humanity. And it's just sort of like, oh, man, it's just like you get little bits and pieces from the different, from the people, and then you have certain people's breaking point. You see them where they encounter a baby carriage or they encounter a something, and it's just sort of like they just like, I can't do this, yeah, and
they just tap out and kind
of this part of it. Yeah, and then you get a little bit of intrigue in terms of like the government maybe not saying more than what they're saying. But I thought this movie, one of the many things it did well was, instead of being some big intriguey plot or like some big intriguey scheme, it was more just sort of like a level of one hand not knowing what the other hand's doing and incompetence. That was more what the culprit was. It wasn't just some big gigantic plan like, oh, we're going to wipe out all the Tasmanians on purpose, and it's sort of like, and then we're going to take all of their left shoes and it'll be great. And like, it's just like, there wasn't some big plan. It was just, and then the recovery and retrieval effort, one section of military people seem to have some one set of data, and another guys have some other data, and it's like you're just, nobody's working off the same page of the playbook, and so that creates this disconnect with the, here's what our effort, here's what we're doing, and like, well, it's like, it's not really what the thing is, and these guys seem to know more than these other guys seem to know. And and then once we get down the coast with Dipshit Magoo and our main character, it's like then you get a whole different realm of things of being like, there's a lot of data that some of these guys seem to know and some of them just don't. And it's sort of like, what the hell does that mean? Does that mean there's just, it was incompetence all the way up, or somebody trying to cover something up, whatever else? And it's like, I took away from it being like, no, it's not, there's no some grander thing. It's just like, it just is.
Like, just, I really liked that idea because it is scarily plausible now.
Yeah. No shit.
Through no malice, but through having like a whole squadron of incompetent fucks that have been placed in positions of power because they're loyal to, say, an authoritarian president.
Right.
Like, that makes so much sense. If they're, you know, Pete Hegseth wakes up one morning, he's like, hick, we're going to test this new weapon on this deserted island. And it's like, dude, that's fucking Manhattan.
Yeah.
Yeah, not a soul in sight. Okay, well, fuck. So that rang really true to begin with. And then just the genius idea of, so almost all of the people are dead, and the idea is that we're just going to go retrieve the bodies, but a very small percentage of them zombify. And of those, a very small percentage get hyperactive. So you've guaranteed that you have this creepy thing if you need it, but you're not obligated to have all of the scenes that are in zombie movies.
Yeah, you don't have to do World War Z with all these people pouring out of a warehouse or something.
And there,
which is also very expensive, I would imagine.
Yeah, so you don't have like people barricaded in a room while like 12 zombies are pounding on the door, but you do have the lady like fighting and kicking her way across a train, right? Like, or God, a bus.
That sequence is fucking amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I watched that. Geek, this is a geeky thing. I watched that sequence like three times because I was just the way that the camera moves up and then slides and goes, and it's not herky jerky, it's not a Danny Boyle thing. It's like, it just, but just the way it comes up and then moves along. I was like, it felt part comic booky and part, it was just like, man, that was just and also just tense as shit. It's like, oh, Jesus Christ. So that's the thing with this movie, is that it gives you like a lot of different stuff. Just it takes the foot off the gas at certain points where, I don't know if you guys had this, but like when they encounter like the bachelor party thing with like the weird warehouse strip club, which I guess is a thing in rural parts of you know, Australia, New Zealand, Tasmania, I guess. I don't know. But it's sort of like, and then you have like the, there was the body there and then the body's not there anymore or else. What we are conditioned to is go, oh, it's going to go, rah, 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 or it's going to, you know, or you're, somebody's going to kick a can and then all of a sudden we're going to go, ooh, and then it's going to be this big old pileup. But instead it's just sort of like, which level of cooked is she? And like, And like same thing with the dude in the one in the garage with the motorcycle or whatever. It's like you they do the really good job of like you see the eyes long enough to go like, what's happening in that head? Mm-hmm. And it's like, is it just fear? Is it a ragey thing? Is it like, what is that? And it's like so they don't yell and scream it. They just let you sit with shit.
And did we mention the brilliant and awful choice to have him do with the teeth thing?
Oh God!
Yeah, never have I heard that before. Like a new way for things to be creepy.
Oh,
that sound!
It is so upsetting, and especially because every now and then it sounds like they broke a tooth. Yeah. And you're just like, God, this is so upsetting. Like, as a guy with lots of teeth issues, like I'm just always worried about stuff like that. And it's just like, oh, and yeah, that's a really cool way to have a lurking presence that's maybe in the darkness or maybe going to come rushing at you. That's not just chittering.
Yeah. Or doing the pop in the neck.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like it's like, oh, this is something that has some motivation for just kind of just is idly existing for the creature. And it isn't something I've heard 6 million times. Like this rules and it's upsetting as hell. So like, bravo for like sound design being at least as creepy as anything the zombies look like visually.
It was also handy because for a while, like a stretch of a couple of years, Jess would grind her teeth at night.
Oh.
And the first time that it happened was after we had recorded. And I went in the pitch blackness of the house into the bedroom, lay down in the bed. She rolled over in bed to face me with her eyes closed and made that noise.
Oh. So like,
and when you're expecting someone to go, oh, how is the show? And instead they go, it was fucking terrifying. So it was good to be able to go, that's what you sounded like. Really? Yes.
Yeah.
That is how the fuck you sounded. Isn't it interesting that
in the dark for 2 seconds, any of us can lose our entire worldview from fear?
Oh, yeah.
It's just so astonishing.
Oh, yeah. No, and I love how much more universal that is as a thing. Like, you can be just a grown-ass adult with, like, you know, expenses and stresses and, you know, needs and start to feel weird and all this kind of whatever else. And you can be in a dark area and be like, I'm going to go quickly that direction because there could be a witch.
Yep.
It's like, doesn't matter. Doesn't fucking matter. It's just sort of like,
there's so many nights I wake up at like 3 a.m. and I'm like, God damn, I'm getting old enough to have to get up to piss sometimes. And then I get up and everything's dark and there's a dark hallway to go down to the bathroom. And every time I go, I got to remember to leave a light on because there's not ever going to be anything there, but I don't like walking down a dark hallway because I watch horror movies all the time.
And then just every instinct in your Cro-Magnon brain is screaming at you.
Yeah.
It's like, there could be a tiger out there. There could be
Or just another dude. You know, that's scary enough.
Well, and like, and so, but, and that's, but so like in, so
I'm about sorry, but when you said that's scary enough, I heard that's Gary enough.
Oh, trust me. It is more than enough Gary.
He's just another dude. And that's Gary enough.
It doesn't necessarily work for either one of your old children exposure necessarily, but there's a wonderful kids book called Not All Sheep Are Boring. And it's written by Bobby Moynihan of SNL fame. And it's this wonderful book about like sheep get this idea that they get this reputation for being boring because people count sheep to go to sleep or else. And so the premise of the book is introducing you to a bunch of sheep that are not boring. Nice. And one of the sheep is like going on about soil samples and grass length, whatever else. It's like, Gary, you know, Gary's pretty boring. And we're also, and then the next page is like, you know, some other sheep doing something else. Like, but not all sheep are Gary. And so now that is a phrase around our household. It's not all sheep are Gary. It's like, we're talking about something being more interesting. It's like, oh, no, not all sheep are Gary. Like, that's wonderful. The other thing. So there's a few different choices in this thing that I think if I wasn't really into it, I think they probably could have taken me out of there. One of which is homeboy in the military guy who's like got the wife The pregnant one and the dancing bit or whatever. But it's like, but what I, but the reason why it didn't, at least for me anyway, didn't take me out of it was it was sort of like when you have some kind of awful apocalyptic, terrible thing like this, it's like the spectrum of human emotion and reaction is going to be all over the board. And like they touch on, they do that a little bit in Walking Dead, you know, they do that kind of stuff a little bit, but it's sort of like, but to see it in this very raw way where it's sort of like you're as an observer going like, you know, she's not your wife and she's not at this and this is not going to be a thing.
But it's won't like, fix anything.
But you can also see that like a human, humanity grasping at itself, it's, you know, its grip on everything. And it's like, and it's like, boy, that's just real like raw and sad. And like, it's, so that was a really like a heavy kind of choice too. And then you get into the thing where, like, you know, the whole thing about, like, a flashback with Daisy Ridley's character, and it's, like, having difficulty conceiving, it's causing all these problems in their marriage, and they're kind of apart in this whole thing or whatever else, and, like, oh, well, she was on... So then you get the reveal that, like, he was at this resort thing with, like, with a woman there, and it's, like, but then she had, you know, got involved with somebody, too, or whatever else, and you're sort of, like, it's, like, ah, yes, because there's, like, nuance to things. And just because, you know, this bad stuff is happening in their marriage or whatever else, like she does still have a level of love and care for this person. And it's sort of like, and it's like, that's complicated and not neat and tidy necessarily. And it's like,
I thought that was brilliant.
Like that was like, maybe that was a super fascinating thing.
That is kind of the distinction for this movie that like many scenes, the, if there are no zombies, that scene does not play out differently. When she finds him and she finds the girl and she's like, well, now what the fuck do we do? Get up. Like, well, you're not one of the ones that gets up. So this is just us. And this is all that I get.
Yeah.
And, you know, this person that I loved and had complicated feelings about is now dead. And now what the fuck do I do? Like, none of that has anything to do with getting yommed by a zombie. It works really well. It's, and I hate to court controversy, as you all know, but this is... this is what the fuck Bone Temple should have been.
Yeah.
Mm.
Because you do have that, like, with dude from Beast of War, which was great seeing him again.
Is that the soldier guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I really like him. I've seen him in a few things. He's pretty good.
You have that whole, like, the true enemy is man guy, right? But he doesn't have to be, like, skinning people alive. He just has to slowly sink into despair and being depraved in a very believable way. I thought that was fascinating. And so like moving away from the zombie tropes and focusing on the people, but in a way that like was far more believable to me, the way that these people behaved and just kept the whole thing grounded in like a, I don't want to say realistic, but like naturalistic. Like,
yeah,
that's fair.
The zombies haven't read the script and they don't know that the stripper zombie is supposed to get up and jump up and scare you right now. That's just not how the story's unfolding. Like, and I thought that was fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah. It's such an interesting, just these very interesting creative choices and just sort of like just some stuff that really sits with you on top of moments that are very kind of tense and like, kind of, you know, there's a lot
yeah,
to
it
kind
does
of
pull those triggers. Yeah.
Yeah, there's
moments, that are gross, you know.
Yeah.
it's just
and there's some genuinely funny stuff here too, which is something I think is, I'm always a little surprised, and, but at the same time, so many horror movies manage to have a little bit of humor without blowing the tone. But like her relationship with, I forget his name, the guy that helps carry bodies out with her and steals the motorcycle with her.
Yeah.
Yeah, D'Artagnan,
Yeah, they have just a really fun... Once they kind of get to know each other a little bit, they just have a really, well, again, naturalistic, just kind of joking around and then accidentally stumbling into a tough topic. And then you can see them decide, we'll give each other space or let's make a joke to lighten the mood. And like, it's just, it feels friendly and, you know, people doing their best, you know, I'm people cleaning up their town after a tornado or whatever, probably are doing their best to like keep spirits up and it's not always easy. So like, yeah, it just seems very natural.
Well, and that kid, I give that kid a lot of credit, the one that plays the dipshit, because, like, he's the fucking kid from Oculus. I just learned looking at the fucking IMDb. Yeah. Jesus Christ, dude.
Good on him.
Like, man. Sorry, Joshua.
Oh, he's... So the the brother from Oculus, or the as a kid or as an adult?
The one as a kid, the kid, the what's his name? What's the character's name? I can't remember what the character's name is. It's
I mean, we have young versions of both characters in that movie, right? So,
oh, he's the one on the left.
That doesn't help. I can't see what you're looking at, bastard.
Yeah, on the poster, the kid version is him. The not the adult version, the kid version is him. Yeah, it's like, oh, fuck.
Because somehow well Oculus came out 12 years ago, and what the
fuck? I know.
Be a grown ass guy now. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, nope.
I mean, we'll get into that with Shelby Oaks as well. We have, I don't think I have to explain my art to you, Warren, as someone's dad. But, you know, I will say that in my list of things right after mom died in a car crash because she had cancer, it's I always wanted to have a child, but I'm infertile, which means I can only be complete if the movie finds a way to give me a baby, and that will be the sole focus of my entire being. Like, that shit is awfully played out.
Yeah.
And so I was a little bit bummed by that when, because the pregnant zombie having the baby is great. The fact that it's a human baby is interesting, right? But then to just have her be like, finally, my life is complete. Like, just get fuck all the way off. And then they did it again in Shelby Oaks. I was like, put a woman on the fucking screen and make her a main character and don't say shit about a baby the entire time. That is your challenge.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Yeah, that one and the crazy military guy are both like tropey. I think they're played, the military part at least, yeah, I think I agree, is played a little more smart than, like, you know, it's not like as crazy as 28 Days Later and shit. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the whole like, somehow I magically end up with a completely, you know, Deus Ex Machina baby at the end of the plot. Like, I guess, I don't know, whatever.
How else could you find completeness as a woman?
Well, oh, that I forgot. Yes, she was incomplete because she's a woman.
Mm-hmm. See, I kind of took that a different way. I sort of was like, sure. I always kept thinking about how, like, you know, there's a thing where none of the edges are really defined. Like, it's like a bad guy and good guy when it comes to Daisy Ridley and the estranged husband or whatever. They can't have a child or whatever else, and she hooks up with somebody. He obviously had to, and there's just a lot of pain, some resentment, some all that kind of stuff going on in that whole situation with the two of them, whatever else. And it's sort of like, but ultimately it was sort of like, I kind of took it to be like this thing of being like, for one thing, like, nature's always going to nature. Like, there's lots of great examples of like nature just sort of being like, well, this shouldn't work this way. And it's like, but it does though. And it's sort of like, and so that kind of took it more like with that. It was like, but I didn't take it much more like, oh, now she's complete as a woman. It was more to sort of like a, maybe part of the thing, I mean, we don't know, but maybe part of the dynamic between the two of them was one of them was way more into the idea than the other one was, and maybe those roles reverse, or maybe it's backwards or forwards, or maybe like, here's all this destruction and all this damage or whatever else, but it's like, but, you know, science keeps kind of science.
It is one, like, hopeful thing that came out of the whole experience, so there's that, yeah.
Yeah, sort of like, so, I mean, like I said, I think if she had some big old monologue about, like, you know, sort of like, well, I felt like an unfinished puzzle. Like, oh, God. And were you were you a tomato the whole time?
And I don't mean to. I think I am putting on this movie a little bit every other movie that's done something similar. And definitely not all of that is attributable to this thing.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because, like, I would assume whoever's writing this movie or any other movie also knows that's an overdone thing. So you like, is it so important to the story that you can't cut it, even though you know people are going to kind of roll their eyes? Or do you just generally go, no, these are still awesome, I love it? Or do you think I have to do this or the audience won't have a feel good moment to go out on? Like, there's different amounts of integrity, I feel like, behind the different choices there. So, like, I don't know, I guess I'll hope for the best on this one just because I like it so much. But yeah,
and it does seems also like you could just replace it. And it does also give us the scene where the guy buries his family and she helps him bury, and then she wangs him with the shovel, and like that is so moving and interesting. And
that one made me tear up, like that part made me go super teary.
We bury the dead together.
It's like, oh, it's just like, no, it's just, and the dead meaning multiple things, and just like, oh, fuck, man. So it's, yeah, goddamn the Australians, like, they just, like, they have the ability to just put in these layers into things. Like, I think about that one, not the short, not the awesome, terrible, terrorizing short Cargo, but the film, the one where, you know, the guy's going to turn into a zombie, but he's got the baby on the back with, like, the bag of meat.
Oh, yeah,
and, you know, that
Freeman.
One.
Oh, Cargo, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that one. And it's sort of like, and, like, God, there are moments in that, too, where you just kind of go, like, it's like, yeah. Oh, you rat bastards. Like, it would be so much easier if this was tidier and more American, but we're not doing that. Like, okay.
Yeah, damn. It would have none of the impact, yeah.
So it's just sort of like the, well, and it's like the same thing as, like, when they send the boat out to sea. It was sort of like, it's like, it's so dumb. Like, it's a dumb thing, but it's sort of like, so is making a, like, making a grave or making a little cross for a thing or doing whatever. Like, all those things are dumb. They're all stupid. But it's, yeah, sort of like, but you still do it. And it's sort of like, okay, well, it's fair,
yeah,
enough.
You do what makes you feel good.
Yeah. So that was just, yeah, I thought this was fantastic. I really dug this a little quite a bit. And fucking, I don't know if IMDb is, or not IMDb, I don't know if Wikipedia is right or not. They say the budget was, although they didn't say the budget, it was the box office for $4 million. Never mind. But it's like, I don't know what the budget was for this film or whatever else. My guess is it probably wasn't a particularly high budget, but boy, did they get some mileage out of it.
Yeah.
But it's also,
although you
cheating.
Look at those locations, like that's just, it's just there. You know, like,
it's like when
you didn't go to, like, any, like, massive, like, skyscraper or, like, a stadium where you'd have to, like, rent it or use it on a whatever day. Like, it's just houses, so, like, maybe.
But also the scenery, just, it's like having a film shot in Ireland, it's just gonna look cool.
Yeah, yeah. If you live in South Dakota, every day looks like a John Ford movie, you know.
We used to live by Monument Valley. Yeah, you just go walking out there and, like, John Wayne would just come walking up and was like, "What's up, Pilgrim?" He's like, "That's a terrible impression of yourself you're doing, John." All right, so for this one, it's you know, I love the weird pacing of this and the uniqueness of it and the humanity of it. And even though I wasn't quite sold on having a lot of it hinge on the pregnancy, it's still pretty fucking neat. So I would give it a 9 out of 10 for me. It's a 9 out of 10 unfortunate facial hair choices.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty much there with you. I think I'm going to go 8.5 out of 10. Zombie teeth grinds. Overall, yeah, I really like this. This is, watching it again for this episode is probably my third time watching it, because I caught it in the theater and was really thinking about it a lot. So I watched it again, you know, back when it had just come out. But yeah, watching it again this time, it had been long enough to have a lot of that stuff get dim enough that I was still able to be surprised. And so, like, it's cool when a movie's good enough to kind of work again 6 months later. So it's pretty rad. I love the Daisy Ridley's performance, I think, is fantastic. Like, you can see how little they did with her in the Star Wars stuff when you see how good she actually is. So, yeah, this is it's a good one, and another one that you can always tell your friends when they're sick of zombie movies. Like, this will give you a little palate cleanser.
Yeah, that's what I really, you know, like, not because, like, everybody comes up with an interesting gimmick, but it's like when you get to see something zombie-ish that's done something different, whether it's comedy, you know, whether it's, like, I mean, you know, whether it's something silly, you know, like a Scout's Guide thing where it's a silly bullshit, but it's fun, or you get something like The Cured, which is just sort of like just epic, and it's an epic bummer, or you get something like this, which is very, like, windswept and, yeah, kind of rural, and it's a different vibe. Like, it's just people bringing different ideas to what you can do with these kind of stories. And it's like, so yeah, I'm up there with Josh. Like, I really was taken by this. I thought it was excellent. So I'd say, yeah, good solid nine out of 10, good solid 9 out of 10. Whatchamdingit,
is it whatchamdingit, like a didgeridoo?
It's that thing in all movies, and I have some experience with this growing up in a candle making family, but you always see those shots in movies, whether it's super cheesy or silly or very, very moving or whatever, but you have like a bunch of candles lit, and you always see that, and it always looks amazing, but you never see them having to light them all.
Mm-hmm. For like 45 minutes.
Yeah, it's like
or one flamethrower.
Was it in Valentine, which is one of the slashers from the late 90s, early 2000s that I will always champion. I think it's great. It's dumb as a bag of hammers, but it's great. But that shot where you get, and then in Urban Legends too, where you get the shot where there's like like 300 candles that are lit in a room, and you're like, boy, they really had to do time management because it takes a long fucking time to do that.
If you've ever watched somebody try to light like 10 candles on a birthday cake, you know how long it takes. Yeah,
you're gonna give away their position because at some point you're gonna hurt.
Yeah, you have to have a pocket full of lighters because every now and then they're going to get too hot. You got to keep them in a rotation.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. So, yeah, ambiance, sure. All the Catholic shit, you know, of course. But you just never see anybody spending all that time lighting all the fucking things.
Right. Or passing out after trying to blow all of them out quickly.
The problem is if you light too many candles in one place, it automatically summons Sting to play his bass.
Oh, that is true.
Yeah, that can really
recommend. It feels like forever because it's tantric rhythms. Right.
Old Gordon.
He's like, I'll be watching you. And like, would you, could you not? Like, turn around.
Taking care of some business over here.
Let's send out an SOS somewhere else. Okay, we'll take a quick break and then we'll come back and talk about other things.
Yes, sir.
So next up, we'll talk about Monkey's Magic Merry-Go-Round, or El Carrusel Mágico del Mono. Or Del Chango, depending on where you are. I think it's sad that there's Mono and Chango for monkey, and Mono is more common. Like, Chango's great.
Or why not get your ketchup in my peanut butter and make it a Mono Chango? Who's the hell to say Mono Chango?
It's a monkey that only has one wheel.
And he juggles while he rolls around.
Yeah.
Very popular.
There was that Simpsons episode where the guy came and tried to sell them the Mono Chango. And is there a chance the track will bend? Not at all, my Hindu friend.
Mono Chango did become the Poochie of Monkey's Magic Merry-Go-Round, though. So, right. Audience got sick of him quickly.
Yeah, I saw Mono Chango play with Ozu Motley, and it was kind of great.
I saw him open for Chumbawamba, actually, I believe.
Oh, the Mono Chango Chumbawamba show was fucking off the chain. It's true. And closing the bill was the. Oh, that's not very exciting. The Monkey's Magic Merry-Go-Round is going to be hard for me to talk about because I think there's a ton of effort put into this and a ton of creativity. And ultimately, I don't think it's super successful. While being kind of in awe of how it all comes together. So it's filmed like a early 80s kids show, you know, like a very Mr. Rogers kind of show, where you have a soundstage made to look like a neighborhood, and you've got like the affable, like non-threatening guy and his puppet pals, and they have like gentle adventures, right? Like the whole thing seems very well thought out and put together. And over time, things just get creepier and creepier for our guy until they end up doing some very fun and interesting things with puppets. But then the pace on this is just lethal, I feel like.
Yeah, it's very much and I say this with, but as Josh says, I mean, there's a lot of effort to make this come to life, and like they really, you know, look legitimately, sincerely, like there's a lot of work into what they were doing, but you know, so I give them a lot of credit for that for sure. But it's just like, and I, again, I say this with affection, but just the amount of time it takes to get to the goddamn point is painful. It's like, you know, initially, I don't know if you guys had this, but you know, like early on, the first 10, 15 minutes of it, whatever else, it's played super straight, and it's played like, you know, but they don't, bless their hearts, they don't lean into this area where they're never going to win the battle of, oh, we'll do like Mr. Rogers, but we'll make him creepy. Like, no, you will not succeed with that, because it takes a Daniel Day-Lewis, Gary Oldman level actor, nothing against this fella who's in this, who plays the main character, but it's like you have to be a god level performer to make that work, because Mr. Rogers is amazing and Mr. Rogers is wonderful, and you can't parody a thing in a way that's going to work. But otherwise, it just sounds like the first draft of a joke. So, but thankfully, they don't. That's not the direction they're going. which I was very glad about. I feel
like they give him the Mr. Rogers look, but more of like the Blue's Clues approach.
Yeah,
you know, like it's very, like you said, it's very innocent, gentle adventures, just kind of explaining basic concepts of how the world works at every opportunity. And it's like, it's pitched pretty young, I think, you know, so yeah, the same age bracket.
But they did a very good job. I think they did a good job of like setting it up, but then not going that route of like, oh, we're going to make Mr. Rogers creepy because you're not going to win that battle. And so they go a different direction of being like, this becomes a kind of a deconstruction of our guy's sort of psyche. And then it becomes sort of a thing about correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think it's sort of, it ends up being sort of about his kind of shitty, awful childhood and this sort of make-believe kind of dynamic that he kind of creates to protect himself and then sort of take over kind of controlling him, sort of. Am I getting that right?
Yeah,
basically,
I got the idea that he had been playing with matches when he was a kid, and like drunk dad was outside and he started a fire and drunk dad tried to save him or tried to do something and ended up killed, right?
Or was passed out, I thought, whatever it is. But yeah, dad died.
Yeah, I mean, like he started a fire that killed his dad. Yeah. I mean, that part of it is what lost me, I think, more than anything, because I was enjoying just the mayhem of this kind of unmaking of this person and the, you know, creepification of all the puppets. Like there's a moment where he does the thing where you like take one knee and make the knee into the head of the puppet and then your arms, the puppet arms. And then that puppet wants to break free from him. Like as soon as he's formed, he has like a consciousness and wants to escape. Like that shit is weird. That should not work, but it does.
Yep.
But so there's that interesting stuff going on. And then you get to the point where he doesn't want to play anymore. And he gets threatened and then he goes, no, I'll do it. I'll host the show. I can host the show. It's like, oh, I like the idea of there being some kind of entity or something who is making him do this. And he's just the latest in the line of hosts that they've had where they have all the fun they can stand. And then they end up getting dismembered and stuffed or whatever. Kind of like the Amazing Digital Circus kind of thing, where someone's just trapped in a TV show that they can't get out of.
Oh, is that what that is? I've only seen the trailers for the movie. I'm not familiar
with it. That's the whole series is on Netflix and YouTube, and it is surprisingly good, something aimed at, like, I'm not the target audience for it at all, but it's pretty damn good.
I'll check it out.
Surprisingly dark.
Ooh, I like that.
Bleak. But so having thought that, just the idea that no, this is all just a metaphor for my childhood trauma, and I'm going to explicitly state that. And I was like,
Yeah, that disappointed me too. And of course, did make me realize I'm pretty sure any feature that has like a puppet in it is always a childhood trauma thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Not a lot of normal people being puppeteers, man.
That's fair. I mean,
and we both know many.
We do. I like them all, I think, but yeah, not normal. As we saw in that short where the guy like orders a puppet, but it gets like grafted onto his hand, mm-hmm. you know, like that's not a movie about a puppeteer, right? That's just kind of a guy. So like you can do a movie with puppets that can just be like a guy, right? So like, give me another reason for the puppets to be there. They can be a Harvey situation where they're hallucinating it, or they can be, you know, really silly looking demons and it's supposed to be funnier that they're killing people like Happy Tree Friends or something. But like, it's a short walk to go puppets, childhood trauma. And I don't think I've seen one that I was blown away by yet. So it's just kind of like, when that surfaces is going to be like kind of the hinging thing. And it's like, okay, so you're trapped in a cycle of ignoring your problems because of unprocessed trauma. Trying to come to grips with the reality of that is very painful. For a while, you try to retreat back into your shitty behaviors. You finally reach some level of acceptance and form a plan. You're ready to move on past these behaviors and try to heal. Great. But like, aren't they all that though? So I don't know. It was just a shame. I just kind of waiting for it to end. Although at the same time, like we all said, like I admire the performance. I think that had to be incredibly hard to do. You know, the style of it and some of the gore is wild and really fun, but like, it's a lot to try to accept as like a lot of just backstory, I guess at some point got dumped on me and I was like, okay.
Well, and like the one that comes to mind with this is the one from a couple of years ago, Mr. Crockett, that was part of the Hulu horror thing. Yeah, the Huluween, which is a blah, blah, blah. and it was like, you know, gosh, I don't know even how to even. I've always whenever it's come up, I've always been like, yeah, we probably shouldn't do that because it's not so good. But it's like at its premise, it's like, yeah, all right. And then there's something that they do right, but once you get into the meat of it, you're like, it's just, you know, I don't know, this is a mess. And like with this one, I just sort of like, I think it's okay to be like to admire the amount of work and effort that it took, and then the work and effort on the part of the main character guy, and then also be like, there's got to be something more to this thing, because like for to be an hour and a half long feature, it's like. You know, I don't know about you guys, but I was expecting at some point, like, he's going to leave the set. There's going to be some other.
Or there will be some kind of, like, and maybe it is just as simple as, like, yes, we know his life is in danger, but there really isn't a ticking clock, is there?
No, I don't think so. I don't think.
No, just things are just kind of falling apart around.
Yeah,
him.
Like, they're falling apart, but it's like, there's no real. I didn't have, like, a good, like, we're hitting the third act type. You know, like, I guess once they string him up to kind of marionette him, it's like, okay, we're clearly hitting the end game here, and that's cool. Mm-hmm. But, like, it's just a series of kind of interesting vignettes, sort of, and some are better than others. But, like, yeah, it's just sort of, it needs something to kind of propel it forward to make me pay a little more attention because I want to not miss a detail because I care enough about the plot, and I just didn't quite have that.
Well, and you think about other ones that are, like, this kind of theme, I guess, which is, like, this, like, artificial reality. Like, was it, was it Voices?
From the Ryan Reynolds one?
Ryan Reynolds one, yeah. And like that one.
That's fun. Yeah.
And like, you know, or that other one that they did with Imogen Poots and dude from Zombieland, Jesse Eisenberg. Was it Vivarium? Where it's like you get these people trying to, you know, or you go non-horror. Well, you go like, you know, Truman Show or, you know, Pleasantville or whatever. And like you get these people trying to deal with this idea of these artificial realities, these like fake, you know, kind of manufactured realities. And they can be very interesting for sure. But it's like there's got to be some other thing. And like the few little clippy bits that we get of like, you know, the little flashbacks and stuff, I just don't think is enough to sustain the weight of this thing, unless, as Josh put it, when we're talking in text messages and stuff, like if this was short, if this was like a mid-length thing, like a 20 to 30 minute thing, then
this would slay. Yeah.
Yeah. This would just kill because it was like, you can keep everything encapsulated in that small amount of space, but an hour and a half long thing, it's like, there's no real anchor to reality. And so it just, and I hate this phrase. I hate when people use it, but I'm going to use it anyway, which is it starts to really wear out its welcome. So when you finally get to the third act and things are going really dark and weird and going all over the place, it's like, it doesn't, there's no stakes. At least I didn't feel like it was just sort of like, it's like, okay, we're just watching weird shit happening, which is fine. You know, fine, whatever. That's good. But it's kind of like, I think, connecting into the real world in some way or having that grounding component would have gone a long way to making that work a whole lot better. Cause as it stands right now, it just feels like it's just a lot of preamble that just feels kind of aimless and endless.
I thought about this a little bit while I was watching it. And I just remembered when, cause both of you now said, yeah, some kind of outside thing, you know, like an outside entity that's like running people through a meat grinder or like a way for people to get a perspective on what this is, I think at some point I noticed that I was having trouble understanding exactly how the descent into madness was supposed to be motivated because he's still making a TV show, but he's clearly doing things that you couldn't do on a kid's TV show. So if they're playing it live, which probably doesn't really happen anymore, like then they would just cut the feed. And if it's being taped, there would be people. And so he's always talking into a camera. So
yeah.
Then the show can't be a real world TV show, not like the type of world we actually live in. It could be an alternate reality where that kind of shit gets on TV, like Videodrome or whatever. But like, if it's not, if he thinks he's having a normal day shooting his thing and suddenly things are getting weird, you know, he doesn't, it seems like your instinct would be to quit doing the show much sooner. And there is a
but
point,
if he's,
I think,
not,
doesn't he at some point turn to the camera and like, you are watching, right, kids? And they go, who are you talking to?
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, is there a camera that he's looking at, or is he simply looking at a blank wall and he is crazy that he, you know what I mean? I wanted a little more grounding of what layer of dream reality, dream logics, reality, sub reality, alternate reality, like, again, like a, somewhere to have like a handhold to let me figure out what broke to make this day different. Or is this the first day?
Like, I just went like a WandaVision direction with it.
Ooh.
And figured like he's not trapped filming a TV show. He's trapped in the TV show.
Okay. So I didn't consider the WandaVision idea. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's just normal to just do asides to no one.
Yeah. That's just, is, you know, if you were watching Steve from Blue's Clues do his whole thing just in a park, that would look weird, right? But they've locked us into the angle where it makes sense. So I was cool with that. Like, it's weird. I feel kind of the opposite though, Charlie. Like, I didn't want to be grounded in the real world. I wanted it to be, I wanted as little information as possible. I wanted, like, he is trapped in this TV show with these characters, and he has to act like the host of the TV show because that's what the host does. And if he starts breaking the rules of how the host of the TV show acts, he gets punished. And I think that is all I need, you know, and at the end, show me like a shadowy figure or, you know, like a alien at a console, like if you have to. But I think for me, it's just enough that Twilight Zone-y kind of thing, like, holy shit, I just woke up and I'm in Blue's Clues.
And this does have that surreality.
Yeah, like, Christ, that chair is talking to me. Like, what am I supposed to do with this? And like, maybe it plays better if you start from the beginning with someone waking up in that environment. But I was willing to accept that he had been just doing the show on autopilot for a while and then slowly started to like remember things and start to push against it. Because I think there's enough of that in there where they're like, you've started remembering, and so now we have to stuff leaves up your ass or whatever. I think it's a Swedish treatment for amnesia. Chumbawamba did it, and Mongo Jumbo. But yeah, like, I take no joy in not taking much joy in this, I guess.
Yeah.
It's, I really want that like 50-minute version of this, because the scenes where he's like being marionetted, fantastic. There's a scene where he's fighting two puppets that are on his hands, and you can see his elbows, and it still works. Like, it's good shit. All that stuff with the knee puppet is freaky. Oh, and we forgot to mention, there is just insane levels of gore.
Yeah.
By the end of this.
Yeah.
There's like cutting off a leg and snapping the bone. And there's so much interesting stuff in here, and then it's just kind of deflates and collapses like a fan in a cupboard, as Eddie Izzard would say. So yeah, it's like, it's a 5.5 for me, because it's so, such a big swing, but it is, it's a miss.
Yeah, you're a little more generous than I am. Same reasoning though. Like, I'm going to say 4.5 out of 10. Why is the ferret huge and scary? But the, yeah, just all the stuff we've talked about. Like, there's a lot of things done very well here, and then some really interesting ideas and performances. It's just, it's something is just missing that made, I didn't latch in and like lock on. Like, it, I don't know. So yeah, you know, I'm not dancing on the grave of it or anything. It just didn't move me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of, what was your number, Matt?
4.5.
Oh, 4.5. Okay. I'm kind of down in that ballpark too. Yeah, it's like, I think it's perfectly reasonable to acknowledge like the sheer amount of effort, time, and energy that went into really making this like the feel of the look of it, and I really can appreciate that a great deal. As you know, anything with like kind of those puppet characters, that kind of thing, like everything from Jim Henson Workshop to Betty Loves You to Meet the Feebles, like there's a range of shit that like we do with puppets, there's like a whole big old bunch of things, and it's sort of like it takes a lot of do to kind of make anything in that realm. I just think, like, on a very fundamental level, like this story wasn't it, and it's sort of like, and so that just makes it feel just interminable. And so yeah, like I say, I'm gonna be a low man on the totem pole here. I'm just gonna say 4, just that with no joy in my heart to say 4, but I'll just say 4 out of 10. 4 out of 10. That fucking weasel character. It's like, what the shit fuck, is, man? It's like this, like, kind of crazy. It was reminded me like an anime character. Like, it's like, if you've got like the squat little woman who with like the crazy eyes, and you've got like 5 people with the poofy hair, and then you've got just sort of like Roger. She's like,
well, like, also looked like Rat Fink.
Yeah, that's what I thought. It had a Big Daddy Roth feel to it too.
Good
call.
Oh well, let's finish up with Shelby Oaks.
Yeah,
Shelby Oaks.
This will be interesting.
Yeah, so this was like, I think it screened at a festival or two, and then it got picked up by Mike Flanagan, you know, executive produced. And I remember there being buzz about it and not being interested in seeing it, and then I saw it. So this starts as kind of a found footagey documentary thing where these early day YouTubers, which is kind of fascinating, like early day YouTubers have a show where they investigate paranormal things and they go missing, and now sister's going to find them. There's a beautiful moment where they break the found footage thing and turn into a movie. And Charlie, as soon as they did that, I was like, Charlie's going to like that.
I was very happy. I had the same thing. I'm like, oh God, Charlie's going to have such a better time. Like,
but that
I
was
almost texted, but I didn't want to give away the surprise.
That moment is really cool. Like the sister whose sister has gone missing is giving an interview, and they cut. She walks to the door. There's a guy at the door. He says, she finally let me go, and kills himself in front of her. And from that point on, we are in like actual movie, because we've gone past the behind the scenes. And like that part is really, really cool. The rest of this, just, I don't know. I think the problem is that it is very slickly produced, but is also very low budget. So where you might have dark lighting and fuzzy focus hiding some of your seams, this is like produced like a 90s slasher. It's that slick visually, but then the low rent demon effects and shit just don't fly. So I had trouble with that. And I thought if it was grimier or like better affected, then that might work. But as it is, like we have, anytime you have literal like demons just kind of walking around, you got to make sure they don't look like Godzilla is going to be fighting them on the next soundstage. And this one does not. So that started me down the road of like, okay. And then just the plot of this, like for me, it just kept kind of grinding and grinding, and then just series of inexplicable choices that the character makes, and then kind of abrupt ending. I was like, wait, the fuck? It's over? And had to go to Wikipedia and make sure I didn't sleep through 4 or 5 scenes, but no, that really was what they were building up to. And like, yeah, this let me down on like every single level. So I won't just keep harping on it, but I was pretty pissed by the end of this.
What do you think, Charlie?
Yeah, I had a different experience with this. It was like, I mean, mainly like, and I'm not gonna lie, like as is evidenced by the fact that both of you thought of this, was that like, I was so over. I'm overjoyed when it was like, oh, and we're going to make an actual movie now. Like, oh, thank fucking God. And it's like, but you know, there are ones that can use found footage in a way that's, there are truly found footage movies like Afflicted that are fucking amazing, or 28 Days Later, or, you know, things like, things like they can really can bring something to the table. And then there's just the thousands of schlocky nonsense that just doesn't work for beans. And so, but they have somebody to go and then like, oh, and then now we're into movie territory, third person, movie territory, like really made me happy. Like I thought that was really cool.
Is Rec 3 the only other one that's done that?
Yeah, I mean, like Tesis, that Spanish one, like it tells a lot of its story in found footage, but it's still primarily a third person movie. Yeah. But they do tell a lot of the story from found footage.
Isn't there some of that to One Cut of the Dead too? Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, so how many counts? Layers do you want to go with One Cut of the Dead?
Well, they just did that this week on Werewolf Ambulance, and I there saw it show up in my thing, and I was like, I'm so excited because neither of them had seen it before. So, and they both are just like over the moon. They're like, we can't tell you how amazing this is. You just have to watch it. And I was like, yay. Two more people found it, and they spread it.
There was that movie, Mr. Jones, that ended up not being that great. But there is a scene where up until now we've had only found footage, like only motivated camera, and they see a TV screen with an angle playing that neither of them are covering, and they go, who's holding that camera? And that camera just takes off and glides forward, and the rest of the movie is in a movie mode. Like that scene in that movie is unforgettable, and the rest of the movie is kind of forgettable, but yeah, pulling that gag is when you can do
that's
it,
pretty cool,
really fun.
So yeah, no, I, you know, so like there's that part of it, which is always gonna make me happy, because you know, just get away from the ridiculously overwrought things that come with a lot of found footage stuff, and I will always be forever baffled by people that I generally will respect their thinking, like when there's certain the names aren't coming to me because it's late, my brain doesn't work, but there's certain found footage movies where I'm just like, I remember seeing them at like festival or at something, you know, or for Panic or something like that, and just being like getting to the end of it and just being seething angry, and then having them be like, oh, they really got into this thing, that thing, whatever else, like, nah, this is the Emperor's New Clothes, my man, like this is a situation where you have brought way more to it than they have. So yeah, just, and like I say, I always have a chip on my shoulder about that part of it, so yeah, any movie that's gonna break out of that is always gonna make me happy. But in terms of like the actual story thing, the things that I found interesting about this that I really liked about this is like, I liked the story itself, like there's a lot of, and I say this with affection, but there's a lot of the dialogue level and some of the character level stuff where you just kind of get people that are trying the best they can do. But it's just sort of like, there's like a line too many oftentimes where it starts to the clunk a little bit dialogue wise. And so like the sheriff character and like the documentarian lady who's played by Emily, some of you know, and it's like a couple other people where it's sort of like there's this clunk to some of that exposition.
I don't know if I'll tolerate anything Keith David says is clunking.
Well, but even you know, God bless him, like even with him, like there's like a line too many.
I'll admit at that interview. Point in the movie, I wasn't very into it. So I was just like, oh, at least I like watching this guy do anything. He can just read the back of a cereal box and I'll be happy. So that was a high point for me.
Well, you know what the funny thing with Keith David is now is like, I hear him speak and he's got that beautiful voice. I think of all the different things that he's done over the years. You think about The Thing and the thing about the Aronofsky one.
Requiem for a Dream.
Requiem. And you think of all these different things he's done. But then the first thing that pops in my head, oftentimes, or most of the time anymore, is I think of Reverse Giraffe.
President on that same show.
No, but I think of Reverse Giraffe. Yeah. It's like, fuck's sake. But yeah, so I mean, I think that, so one of the things I think that weighs it down is just there's a lot of it from the middle, from about the midpoint on to the end, where there's just a line too many, or two lines too many, or just too much. Where it's sort of like you get a little bit of that, like the thing from Super 8, what are we supposed to do about it? You know, these murders, and it's like that kind of thing where it's sort of, it just becomes too much in these lines. And so even though, you know, even though Camille Sullivan's great and she's just a solid actress in general, there are scenes in the last third where I'm just sort of like why on earth did, why on earth is that not half as long for all the stuff that she's saying or that part of it? And then you get into the lag, you know, truth be told, there's some rulesy, nitpicky things, like, you know, when they rescue the sister and they bring her back and it's like the next day she's allowed to go home, and it's like, no.
Like the grime on her teeth and everything.
Yeah, and it was just sort of like, and that really, because to me ultimately, like, I get the idea that you want to get them out of that, out of a sterile environment. You want to get them in an area that has shadows and light, and you can really make a movie out of it as far as the look goes. But it just, that took me, when she waits, she's like, oh, they're gonna bring her home, and you know, she's adjusting well or whatever else. I'm like, it's like, just, if you want to do that, either fast forward a couple months or give us something in the hospital or something, because it just sort of like that transition was, it just felt very like just very underdeveloped and under thought out. I like the idea that ultimately, like, there's just no escaping this other entity thing. And I find it interesting, and I would like it more people to think about this when they're doing like exorcism movies or like, you know, possession movies, where like you have a thing that's going to possess a person, but that person already had some badness going. And it's sort of like, and I think that's an interesting concept. I would love for some really smart writers to sit and think about what you can do with that idea. Like, I feel like maybe like a Joe Hill could come up with something interesting, or Aaron Justin could, you know, Aaron Moorhead and Justin Benson could come up with something where you can just like get somebody who's bad already and then bring that into it, and then what occurs there. And it's sort of like, so that's a super interesting concept, that's a super interesting idea. But it's just sort of like, it felt like a lot of the last third of it just, it was a lot of decision making that was like getting the story to the end of the story versus being like, just let it breathe. Because if you let it breathe, there's a lot more creepy shit that you can get from it. And so it's been interesting reading what people have thought about it. I don't know if you guys were this way too, where, and you know, I've got a strong bias here, so I'm not a useful narrator, but like, there's a lot of people I've been reading some reviews and stuff, and people have been saying like, oh, like the first half of it is like really solid, and then it kind of falls apart. And I'm like, yeah, but the first part of it's all the fun footagey stuff. So it's sort of, I don't know if you guys thought maybe it held together stronger at the beginning part, or like, I don't know where you
I would say I was like, I'm not usually bothered by simply watching anything found footage. There's a lot of shitty found footage. There's a lot of shitty everything, but Sturgeon's Law, I think. But so yeah, I was like, okay, this is all right. Kind of what happened to the paranormal investigators? That's a fine premise. And they're doing a couple weird things, and I'm like, this is all pretty chill. And then when it cuts and we suddenly realize we're in a regular third person movie, and within a minute of that, guy shows up, she finally let me go, blows his head off, and everybody loses their minds. I'm like, okay, I was okay and interested. Now I am fascinated, because you've given me two huge swings that have me going, I can't wait to see where this goes next. And then I'm kind of paying attention, and it didn't take long before I'm going, oh, okay, it's like an Incubus thing. I'm like, okay, all right. Oh, we're going to get a lot more lore. Okay, I like lore. And I'm like, oh, it's just kind of the typical lore. Okay. And then it just, oh, now it's bigger swings. This, like, the dungeon rape factory, and there's the newborn who's going to do whatever, and like, they're trying to kill the baby. And like, this suddenly feels like you realized you had stuff you could have drip fed us through the entire movie, but because you had to have a whole chunk that was found footage, it all got shoved into like the last half hour, and it wasn't enough for me to suddenly care about it, because it just felt like you're throwing things at me to try to get my attention. And if I'd been more hooked in, I might have been, or might have rolled with it better.
Like, they had me at the gunshot for sure. And then almost immediately after, lost me, because they cut to like 3 hours later and she's sitting there and still has all his blood all over her face.
Yeah, that was.
That annoyed me too.
Really bugged me.
Yeah, and then like
when her husband comes in to talk to her.
Yeah. He's like, hey, babe, I'm going to talk to you like normal, even though you're fucking covered in some random guy's blood.
Yeah.
And I think that's the moment where I was like, this movie doesn't care about me.
That's a very Stephen King type of thing, right? Like, they'd be like comatose or something. You
she
know?
Would
like,
have taken a cock-a-doody shower. Yeah. And then it's like, she goes, 30 minutes from the end, it is like, oh shit, plot. Fuck. She goes on, she watches the videos, and then she drives out in the middle of the night to this prison so she can look through the window and see the Ferris wheel. And then she decides to go drive in the middle of the night to this other place. And then one of the hellhounds comes and leads her in like a very chill German Shepherd kind of way. It leads her to the cabin where everything is going down. And there's the crazy lady. And this thing is like, it just gets very tiresome because to start with, like, she goes to the prison in the middle of the night. And that doesn't seem like a thing that any sane person would do or that that character would do at that point. But she has to move the plot. And then it just, yeah, the hellhounds looked silly. The demon looked silly. That I could not invest even in the slightest. And except I was impressed that they had her lunge at the baby with a pillow to smother it and kind of annoyed that they didn't seal the deal. Like, give me more movies like Immaculate, where Sydney Sweeney just has the baby and then crushes it with a fucking rock. I see that. Yeah, if you're going to make your woman's entire arc be about a baby, that's the way to do it, you know?
I was just thinking of the fuck. What was the one? What's the one where the. It's that super fucked one where it's the Chekhov's dog where like, okay, eventually that dog is going to attack that child.
Where evil lurks.
Where evil lurks. Like, you know, the kind of the combination of like where evil lurks and Ingrid Jackson on the coffee table where there's just sort of like, well, lots of bad shit's going to happen to a child.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like, it's just sort of like, what's 5 minutes in? You're like, yeah, I just gotta accept the idea that that's just going to be a lot of badness visited on a child.
Oh, you know what this movie made me realize? Because it's always interesting to see the evolution of doing research in movies, right? Because like in the 80s, it's library, right? Card catalogs and stuff. And then now it's most things have a, you know, Temu version of Google search engine and everybody uses that or whatever. And this movie did a little of both, which I thought was interesting. But what it really made me realize is that as soon as she starts learning about incubuses, everything, the illustrations are all like old famous Renaissance paintings or Enlightenment paintings or woodcuts. And I'm like, do they have safe search on so hard she can't see like wicked cool incubi from like DeviantArt or something? Like, it's never anything that looks like a monster. And I'm like, I'm assuming we'll see a monster. I bet it's not going to look like a woodcut. It's going to look like a big freaky DeviantArt monster. Like, show us the concept art as one of the results. I think that'd be fucking rad. But I don't know. It's one of those things that occurs to you when you're kind of checked out.
Well, and that was the other thing too, is like, you know, and of course this has been, we've talked about this, you know, many, many times over the years, but like the two of the guys that produce this are friends of mine, you know, like the guy who shot it's a guy I know, the people that are in the cast are people that I know. So it's like, it's kind of a weird, tricky spot. But you know, but at the same time, like Aaron would be the first person. Absolutely, Aaron would be the first person where, you know, with you know, when they did the adaptation of Revival for Sci-Fi, which I thought was awesome because I love that comic very, very much, and I thought they did a great job. But it's like there's a few little moments here and there and there that it's sort of like, and then like at least the Silverstone Shark one, where it's like, you know, Aaron will be the first person to tell you that did not come out the way that they wanted to come out. Like, he's not gonna, you know, and if you were to say that doesn't really seem like it came out the way you wanted to come out, like, he's not one of these people that's just gonna, you know, it's gonna fall to pieces because he's not a fucking idiot. But at the same time, you know, like when these things are very much a collaborative art, it's sort of like, you know, I don't know Chris Tuckerman, so I don't really know enough on that part of it. And so it's like, I don't know to what degree this was a finished, you know, thing. And then you start getting additional ideas, you kind of mush in there. And as Matt said so perfectly, it's like you get to that thing where you're like, oh, we got a lot more plot, we got to get in there, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, and so I don't, you know, I don't know if maybe that's part of why there's a disjointed kind of component to this. What I really want is somebody that has the stones, because there's so many shots of this look just tremendous. And there's some really good moments. I hate admitting this out loud, but there's some great moments in the found footagey parts that really were unnerving, not because of the damn swing and jump and whoa, but it more just sort of like the ambiance of a thing, or being like, just trying to get a gauge on what you're looking at. You know, like the fuckers that did all the Hell House movies ought to take a note about how to like not just make it so you're waiting for the blue ball of just being jumped out at something by something. Like, God, just this, you can actually do this in a way that doesn't have to be jumping out of shit all the time. But anyway, like, there's some parts in there that are really, really good. There's some parts where this become a film part that look excellent, that are really sharp, really solid. And so it's just like, but what I really want, I want people that have this creative juice to instead of have it be one more goddamn paranormal people out searching around for a thing, have it be completely un-goddamn related. Have it be something where it's just sort of like a historical thing, or like a YouTube channel where they explore science things, or just get away from paranormal, get away from true crime, get away from that stuff. Like, you know, Undertone was another one where it's sort of like, it's got to be one more, oh, we're doing creepy shit. Then like, oh, somebody will find the creepiest shit. That's like, oh my God, like, enough already. Like, go in a, go find a different area. Go look at something different.
Yeah, the 80s and 90s had a lot of like EPA agents out testing water viability that would run into a monster. Like, let's get that again. I like a Bigfoot.
Yeah, I like big feet.
Oh, big feet.
Crabbed feet.
But, you know, so it's like, so, but at the same time, like, you know, like I said, I think I probably had a better experience with this overall, but I would say if you were doing another draft of this, I think you remove some plot elements from the second half of this and then just really lean into the kind of sinister concept of a thing that's inhabiting somebody who's already got a bad thing going. Like, that's something, there's something really meaty there, and that doesn't get to sit enough.
Yeah, they wrote themselves into a corner, right? Because, like, the big shock and hinge of the movie is right around that guy being dead. So, like, yeah. If you're like, ah, damn it, that would be the only person who has real, motivation to kind of keep doing something, even though he's been puppeted or whatever. But, like, yeah, you kind of lose your antagonist, your direct antagonist, right as it kicks off.
Yeah. So, I mean,
it's tough.
Yeah, it's an interesting balancing act. It's a tricky bit of business. But I can certainly not fault anybody from getting to the end of this and going, like, well, why wasn't, and where was, and why was, and then just being, you know, like, I can get that level of, you know, that sort of like, ah, Pete's sakes.
I sit the stomping around mad, going like, hey, well, if that's the thing, then why was that thing? Yeah. Yeah. So for me, like, I am happy whenever people make a thing, and that's great. For me, this is like a 3.5 out of 10. Like, I just could not get on its wavelength and could not even see it.
I'm a little higher than that. With the philosophy, it's okay to like parts of things. I was really excited about how that first hunk of the movie up to these, you know, guys killing himself and the swap to, you know, third person. Like, that is so cool and was so well done. And so I've like, I respect it enough that I think, you know, the other parts that didn't work for me, I was sticking it out to the end harder than I want. I wanted to stick it out harder to the end on this one than I did for Monkey's Magic Merry-Go-Round. So I'll give this a 5 out of 10. Footage is found.
Footage is found. Yeah, I want to be the high man on the totem pole here. Like, you know, like I said, there's a lot in here that I liked, and anybody who makes the decision to abandon found footage to an actual third person, that makes me happy. So, you know, there's enough in here that I liked, and then that core concept, that possession concept, and that respect is like, I think there's somebody hate to be made there if somebody can really get in there. And I found that it's just, over the years, I would have thought about different short story ideas or story ideas and stuff like that. From time to time, I really get interested in that idea of like, it doesn't have to be big and showy or gigantic. It can just be small and sinister. And like, what does that look like? Like, that's interesting. So, you know, like, I think there's a lot of that stuff going on there, and there's some stuff that I thought works, yeah, pretty, pretty well. But it's like I said, it does, Matt just perfectly encapsulated it, but it's like this amount of stuffing in some of the plot components and just not letting anything have any space. But at the same time, like, a level of over-explaining or over-stuffing that kind of can make it feel a little bit disjointed in that respect. But all that being said, like, there's enough in here that I really liked that I would kind of go, like I said, it'll be the high man on the totem pole here. I'm going to say, I'm probably going to say like a 6. Like a 6 out of 10. 6 out of 10. Well, we were gonna give her a thing to wipe her face off, but we thought maybe it might have been evidence, so we thought we'd just leave it be. And then it was like, then we forgot. So,
call back during business hours.
Like, we're going to go get some pizza, Chief. You want to get some pizza? Like, no, get her a wipe off her face. Like, oh, okay. Out of 10.
Yeah. We'll take a quick break then, and we'll talk about things that we're going to talk about in the future.
Yes, sir.
So next time we're going to watch some new stuff, some things that we've been interested to see and have been kind of popping around. So we're going to watch Gaia, that is available on Tubi or not Tubi on Amazon Prime. And we're going to watch
South Africa.
We're going to watch Inhuman Kiss, which is currently only available on YouTube, but in a pretty good dub. So if that gets yanked for some reason, then we will pick something else. But for now, we're going to try it. Inhuman Kiss on YouTube. They will kill you on HBO Max, which is how I will say it forever.
It's a very Ren Hoek line.
They will kill you on HBO did. Max. So, Gaia, Inhuman Kiss, and they will kill you. And I've been Josh this entire time, and I say goodnight.
And we'll have a short for the next episode that is called Someone is in My Basement. That one is that's on YouTube. I'll have that located in the show notes for this episode on horrorshowhotdog.com, where you can find links to contact us, subscribe in different ways if for some reason the one you're using doesn't suit you. And with all that being said, as far as you all know, I've been Matt this entire time, and I'm sorry.
This is Charlie down in Austin. A really quick recommendation for a comic thing. I know we bring up comic stuff from time to time. I just got done reading Exit Stage Left, the Snagglepuss Chronicles. And, you know, there's a range of these things, like Afterlife with Archie, I thought was great. Sabrina, I thought was great. But then there's other ones that get done where I'm kind of like, it's a mixed thing. This one is amazing. It's basically like it sets Snagglepuss as like a playwright in like the kind of Red Scare McCarthy kind of era of the 50s, and basically like sets up these characters as if they're like kind of like these sort of influential writers of the time, and like kind of the kind of un-American activities like stuff and anti-gay things and all this kind of stuff, and it's funny and it's really fucking cool.
Did Elliot Kalin do that one? Is that, I think he did a Snagglepuss. Do you know who the writer's on that?
Oh, it was, let me find it really fast. I just had a pull up because I wanted to send it to you guys, but it was Mark Russell. And Fien's the main artist, but like I thought it was great. I thought it was super interesting to take that character and kind of some of the Hanna-Barbera sort of lore and kind of mix it in there too. Huckleberry Hound is like a gay novelist, sort of like a Capote kind of character. And anyway, it's really interesting and very cool and kind of sad and tragic, but it's just interesting. So I just thought it was cool to like have this thing that's like these like recognizable things, but not just put it like, oh, what if we have them all fucking? Like, it's not like that. It's just a very different social kind of idea, you know? And so anyway, I thought I'd mention that. Like I said, it's Exit Stage Left, Huckleberry Chronicles, or
Snagglepuss.
Snagglepuss Chronicles, gracious sakes. And I think they've got a trade paperback of it now. Yeah, that's available. And I think it's on the digital comic things too, but yeah, give it a go. It's an interesting thing that I thought I would mention. So anyway, be good to yourselves, be good to each other, take care, and we'll talk to you pretty soon. I will see you later. Go, bye-bye.
That's true, we do make at least that joke all the time. Well, you do.
That was so weird when that movie came out, because it was never just like Precious. It was always Precious, based on the novel Push by Sapphire.
Which is like, there had to be some insane legal wrangling with like, absolutely, you're not changing the name of my thing, but we just don't think it'll do well. You want it to make money, don't you? And like, that was the closest they could come on meeting in the middle.
Because there was a movie that had just come out called Push that was about like dueling psychic teenagers or some shit.
Oh my god, I remember that now. I didn't see it, but I remember that existing.
They didn't want to call it Push, but then they thought it was very important that everyone who read the novel Push by Sapphire would know that Precious was based on the novel Push by Sapphire.
Yeah. Well, I just noticed that when movies are bad, it's astonishing they get made.
Well, I just noticed that watching the Tonys this last week, where the Rocky Horror Show, it's like, it's not the Rocky Horror Show, it's Richard O'Brien's the Rocky Horror Show. It's like, oh, really? With the Claudio Simonetti's Goblin, that's sort of like they could never agree, and so they have just two different versions of Goblin that just have different person's names in the front of it.
Yeah, like, I think there's also...
there's the Mike Love version.
that one can just suck a bag of dicks as far as I'm concerned. It's like
the Lee Cronin's The Mummy, like that title was necessitated by, we don't want anyone to think this is either a sequel to Brendan Fraser or a Tom Cruise, because we think neither one will make money. And now they're going, you know, we should maybe do another one of those Brendan Fraser
ones. Yeah, it's just a Dave Chappelle meme. Like, you got any more of those Brendan Fraser movies?
Well, I really love the people that are anybody over the age of 40 range or whatever else, can, if they're being honest with themselves and they're a pop culture kind of person, if they're being honest with themselves, they're like, The Mummy was a good definer of your sexuality, really. Because it's just sort of like you look at, you have like your Brendan Fraser, and you have like Rachel Weisz, of course, and even what's his nuts, the leader of the kind of local, I can't always think of his damn name.
Oh, yeah, he's a really good looking dude. He's like, that guy that really every race on Earth.
He showed up in Star Trek Discovery and stayed on through the Starfleet Academy, and is just every bit as sexy now as he was 30 years ago.
Good for him.